Podtacular episode 393, Halo Free, for October 7th, 2013. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And yes, you heard that right. Brent is back in the co-host hot seat.
Back in the saddle again.
It is good to have you back, my friend.
Yes,
you have been
it's good
missed.
To be back.
Twitter has been all awry. I've been getting death threats. I've been getting people throwing stones at me, wondering where you've been, and all this other stuff that I'd rather not go into. But it's good to have you back finally on the show.
Oh, it's good to be back. I miss being on the show. This is the one thing that gives me a little bit of happiness during the week. Is knowing I can get on here and talk about Halo and just be belligerent and an awful person. You know, this is my outlet.
I see. I didn't know we were fulfilling that kind of role for you here at Podtacular.
No.
But now that...
Yes, it's a very therapeutic role. It helps me. I love being back. I'm glad to be back. I'm going to try to improve myself even more now that I'm here. I'm going to try to be a better host.
I see. Very nice. Well, we were glad to have you back, of course. Lots of things going on in the realm of Halo since you've been gone, of course. We've had the Halo 4 Global Championship at PAX, so that was all big and interesting and a whole lot of fun. You would have really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I would have. This was the first year in, like, the past 4 years that I didn't keep up with the things that were happening at PAX. So that was kind of disappointing. I actually wouldn't have realized that PAX was happening if the Global Championship hadn't occurred during the event. So
yeah,
kind of makes me sad. You know, I used to be up on gaming stuff like 24/7. I'd be on NeoGAF constantly, you know, keeping up with all the breaking, you know, gaming industry news. And now I know basically nothing about what's going on in Halo or gaming or any of that.
Yeah. Well, you have been without a laptop for a little while.
Yeah, that was the main issue. Generally, I like to consume my news from a nice, comfy chair where I can look at my laptop. I've had a 3DS I could use, but the 3DS was never meant to be a multimedia device.
It can only take you so far in terms of catching up on news and watching videos and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'm back. I can keep up with everything that didn't really mean anything to me. I mean, it did mean something. I love keeping up with gaming news. Simultaneously, I understand that it's probably completely frivolous to keep up with that stuff. Like, I'm not gaining anything from knowing, you know, what's coming out next week or what the newest game announcement is, but I like keeping up with that stuff. That's kind of my passion. So it's good to be back. It's good to have a way to fuel my OCD, my need to always know what's going on with video gamers around the world.
Good. Well, it's good to have you back in the hot seat, like I said before. And we got quite a few things that have come out this last week and a half regarding Halo. Lots of interesting things, most of which I think everyone is going to be very happy with. Some Halo 3 news, of course. We also have the Halo 4 Game of the Year edition that's going to be coming out tomorrow as of this recording. And a few other things in the bulletin as well. So we're going to kind of go through things kind of quickly today. Because we are recording this on an off day and just kind of getting Brent back into the swing of things. So don't want to draw it out more than we have to. But if we go on our tangents, which we tend to do, we'll probably talk a little bit. But
Pokemon.
Yes,
Pokemon.
Yes, the classic Podtacular tangent of Pokemon.
No, I'll try to contain myself.
It's all right. We all have that secret love for Pokemon somewhere in there if we grew up around that time frame.
Yeah, some people don't. You're
right. Some people don't.
A lot of gamers in our age group love Pokemon, but the ones who don't like Pokemon really, really hate Pokemon.
You kind of have to be in that demographic and in that time frame to really be affected by Pokemon that way.
I used to kind of be that way with Star Wars. Like, I enjoyed Star Wars, but not as much as some people I knew. Like, the extended universe stuff really didn't interest me, like, and every time I'd see these extended universe, like, Star Wars series, I'd get angered for some reason, but I knew it was just irrational. I mean, if you like that stuff, that's great. I just never got into it. I enjoyed like the first three Star Wars movies, but beyond that, that universe didn't interest me. But it, like with people who hate Pokemon, like they will just anytime they see any kind of Pokemon news on a website that isn't, you know, made specifically for Pokemon. This is a Halo podcast.
Yeah.
And we've had tons of mail in the past saying, quit talking about we don't care about Pokemon, we want Halo. And that's right. If you, you know, subscribe to a Halo podcast, you want to hear about Halo. But
everyone has their little side niches, though.
Yeah.
I've never really come across anyone that's absolutely hated Pokemon, though. Not in the way you're describing.
They're out there. I generally don't associate myself with those people. I'm joking. If you don't like it, that's fine. But
it's not for everybody. And it was kind of meant for a certain kind of time frame.
Well, you got this odd thing where you had a series that was made for children. And at the time it was made for children, children loved it. You know, I mean, back in 1996, you didn't have, you know, college kids, you know, 20-year-olds playing Pokemon because that wasn't cool. Pokemon was a kid's series. But now those kids grew up and they are in college. They are in their 20s and the series kind of evolved with its fans.
Yeah, except for Ash. He's still what? Preteen?
Yeah, he's still. I mean, that's another thing. I don't care about Ash anymore.
It's just like Family Guy. The Family Guy characters don't grow old at all either.
No, that's actually kind of a rarity to see an animated series where the characters age, you know, according to their, you know, in real time or, you know, dilated time. But
right.
Either way, it's a rarity. Like, just off the top of my head, the only series I can think of in any kind of animation, like any kind of drawing, is like Gasoline Alley, which is a comic from, you know, the 40s, you know, through now, but people don't know about it.
From the 40s?
Yeah, it was just a comic, like the kind of comics you'd see in the newspaper.
Oh, it's a comic, okay.
Yeah,
Gasoline Alley. That's a little bit different, but yeah,
that's... But I'm saying that in Gasoline Alley, the characters age in real time. Like, as the years go on, they get older. That's the only thing the only series I can think of that does that in animation or fiction.
Right.
But that's not what this podcast is about. We got some stuff
to talk about. No, not quite.
Yeah. We're already talking about tangents and we went off on a tangent.
It's bound to happen.
Yeah, yeah. A short show this week anyway, so.
Yeah.
It's good to put a little filler in there.
Certainly.
What's important this week, Dusty?
So let's see. A couple of big things and then lots of little other things that are important this week. First off, the big thing that I'm sure everyone is kind of happy about at this point, although most people that are probably listening to this already own this thing that we're going to talk about, but Halo 3 is going to be free as part of the Xbox Live Gold free catalog of games that they've been doing, and it's going to be out on October 16th, absolutely free. So if you're one of our younger listeners that have never played Halo 3 and you got your start on Halo Reach or Halo 4, then you can download Halo 3 and see what some of the classic Halo was like, and in all honesty, how some of the core Halo experience was. To actually go back and see how it was balanced, where you didn't have sprint, you didn't have all these extra little things like jetpacks and loadouts, and
well, you may still not have friends. That might not have changed.
we're not going to judge in that way.
No.
So you'll be able to download Halo 3. You can play the Halo 3 campaign. And you still have to get some of the DLC. There's the Heroic Map Pack, which turned to be free, and Cold Storage. So you can get those map packs for free. And then I believe the Legendary Map Pack is 400 Microsoft points, and the Mythic Map Pack is still 800 for both of the Mythic sets. So it's one of those games where I think a lot of people listening to this are probably going to go back and play for nostalgia's sake, since the Halo 3 population will probably grow and be not nearly as big as it was back in the days of Halo 3, but probably be very significant. There was something else that came out on the Major Nelson radio show this last week, and he actually said that they're going to be changing up the playlist for Halo 3 a little bit, kind of sprucing things up and redoing the playlist to better serve the community when they when the game drops on the 16th. So I don't know how many people have been playing Halo 3 recently, but if you look at some of the playlists that are in there, there are probably half of the playlists that just have nobody in them. And of course, the playlists like Big Team and a couple of the Slayer type ones have people in them, with Big Team kind of being the big population holder. We actually did, there was a Populate Halo 3 day a couple weeks ago, and we went and did that for Monday Night Matchmaking two weeks ago. And Big Team was definitely the one that had the most people in it. I think there's like 1,700 people in Big Team for Halo 3. So they're going to be redoing the playlist a little bit, maybe bringing some different game types in from the playlist rotation that they currently have in there, all that stuff. So Halo 3 coming to be free on October 16th. Rework of the playlist on there as well. So definitely go and grab those, as I'm sure a lot of us here will be getting on Halo 3, and probably many other people that are listening to this as well.
Oh, yeah. If you care anything about Halo, then Halo 3 was probably a big part of your life for a few years there after. What was it, like 2007 when it came out?
Yeah, it came out in 2007.
So, yeah, that was a fantastic game. I just remember the biggest deal for me was the huge leap in graphic fidelity. You know, you had this, you know, the Xbox looked nice for its time. You know, back then you had the GameCube, the Xbox, and the PS2, and those graphics were, you know, an entire leap above the N64 and the PlayStation 1. But then the 360 came out, and there was this even bigger leap from, you know, these kind of very blocky, polygonal, you know, super soldier men to this high def kind of, it just looked incredible. And at the time, there were these people who kept saying, yeah, Halo 3 just looks like Halo 2, just a little up-resed. And I kept looking at the screenshots. I'm like, did we play the same games? Like,
probably not.
No, I mean, everything about Halo 3 looked so much better than Halo 2. And just that leap alone kind of signaled a different shift in the way people would play Halo. And Halo 1 and Halo 2, it kind of the blocky geometry of, you know, everything kind of, I don't know if it changed the way people play, but it seems like it was more simple to play. Like, Halo 2 seemed like a more simplistic game, you know, visually, you know, progressing through the map. It just seemed more simplistic, more basic. Whereas in Halo 3, you have all this detail, so you can have these nooks and crannies that have very specific, you know, curves and you know, things that you didn't see in Halo 2. So for me, that was why Halo 3 was such a, you know, big deal when it came out.
Yeah,
Halo's huge, huge jump.
Yeah, Halo 3 was definitely a lot more vibrant, and just from the technology side of things, it was a completely new console from Halo 2.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't see how people can really say Halo 2 looks like Halo 3 in any way possible.
Other big shift was the armor abilities. But go ahead, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Well, it wasn't armor abilities, it was
equipment. Armor equipment, yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting, especially, and it actually worked pretty well for Halo 3, unlike some of the stuff that we got in Halo Reach and Halo 4 that kind of breaks the game a little bit, but you had things like the regen, the trip mine, the flare, which was just more annoying than useful. And yeah, there were lots of little cool things that they did with Halo 3 that really kind of evolved the franchise, where you had the continuing evolution of weapons. It had a good set of maps to play on as well. And it was, I think in most people's opinions, for people that have played Halo throughout a kind of a wide range of the Halo games that have been out there, I think most people identify with Halo 3 as being the prime time of Halo so far.
That was, for me, the apex of the franchise as far as in terms of popularity. When Halo 3 came out, it couldn't have possibly been more popular than it was.
Right. We're not talking about popularity in terms of total numbers, but if you look at the people that were playing Xbox at the time, taking that percentage, then Halo 3 is probably the most popular game.
Oh, yeah. I remember when that first trailer was revealed at E3 2005 or 6, man, people were going nuts. That was crazy. You hear this real kind of very
The walking up to the crater?
Yeah, you get this real creepy kind of, eerie in a way, but calming. He's walking up to the crater and you hear Marty O'Donnell's, classic. I mean, it wasn't classic back then. Back then it was brand new, but you have this nice little ding, ding, ding,
ding. Yeah.
Then you're dun.
Yeah, it was this epic music. And then Marty music. You can't get much better than that.
Then you have the chief walking out, and he sees this, this huge ditch with, the portal to the Ark in it. And people went nuts when they saw that. People were going insane. I don't think you're ever going to have that reaction to another Halo announcement ever again. Because
I doubt it.
The reaction to that was people were going crazy because it was the return of Halo. I mean, Halo 2 was kind of rushed out. There were a lot of problems with Halo 2, mostly in its single player, but the multiplayer was where it was at. That's how it's always going to be with Halo. And
Halo 3 was kept so secret.
Yeah. I don't know if people were just starved for more Halo and that's what made Halo 3 so popular, but that was the peak of the popularity right there. And then the Believe ad campaign, that was, in my opinion, the best ad campaign ever for anything.
Yeah.
For
Halo 3, they had some of the best campaign stuff that they could do for it.
Well, to me, it was kind of this transition from not hokey, but people didn't really think of Halo as this military franchise until the Believe campaign came out, and that kind of pushed the UNSC into the picture, said, hey, these are real human beings in real wars that have real effects on the people who fight them and the civilians and things, and that's why the Master Chief is important. He has this universe with real people, with real emotions that he has to save. He had to sacrifice to protect them. And that's, to me, kind of the point where I really started getting interested in the Halo story. Like, before, it just always seemed kind of like, yeah, I'm the super soldier hopping around space, whatever. Things blow up, that's cool. But the Believe ad campaign was the first time I'd ever gotten emotional over Halo. The trailers, just incredible, It felt like a fully fleshed out universe.
Well, and there was the memorial, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they had that Halo Fest. They had it broken down.
Yeah.
But I remembered seeing doing the web interactive part for that whole memorial and going through the whole thing.
Is that still up? Can people still go
I don't know.
That seems like something you'd want to keep up.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that's something they would keep up. I'll have to check real quick. But yeah, there were lots of different promotional things behind Halo 3 that really made the expectation for it just skyrocket.
I think Halo 3 was the last game Bungie wanted to make. I feel like that was the last Halo game they wanted to make. Not the last, game ever, but...
Right.
I feel like after Halo 3, I mean, they put everything they had into Halo 3. And then Halo 3 had problems, just like any game, but... That felt like a more polished, a more serious endeavor by Bungie than Reach did. ODST even felt kind of... It felt like a project they wanted to do until they realized that it wasn't what they wanted it to be, maybe. That doesn't make any sense, and I'm not sure I could make it make sense. But it just seemed like after Halo 3, that's when Bungie kind of decided they wanted to move away from Halo, even though they were under contractual obligation to keep making it.
Hmm. Yeah,
I mean, that's not really a bad gun to be under, though. Make this multi-billion dollar franchise. Do it now.
But still, a lot of people will argue that they really didn't put their heart into the last game with Reach.
No.
But it does not look like the Memorial Flash Tide is up still, actually.
No, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
But you can still find the videos on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And,
But that flash site was cool because you could actually go through and look at all the different details and things. I'll have to ask Jess about that. Maybe it's something that they can put back up.
If even for just a little while Halo 3 comes out.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot her an email after we're done recording. Because that sounds like something that I think a lot of people might go back and look at.
I would. That was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft is kind of hit and miss with their marketing department. You know, sometimes they have really good marketing, sometimes they have no marketing at all. But
yeah, we can see that with the Xbox One.
Yeah. If they want to learn how to do marketing right for a video game, all they got to do is look back on that. All they have to do, I mean, and they kind of follow that tradition with Forward Unto Dawn in a way, but that's the way to do it, in my opinion. Look back at the Believe ads.
Well, and we were talking about, or I don't know if we were talking about this on the last podcast, but I think it was, I was actually talking to, you remember Laird, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was talking to him a couple days ago, and we were talking about stuff that 343 should probably do if they look into doing more legendary content for, or limited edition content for the next Halo game. And it's like, Bungie was very good at giving us physical things in the bonus packs of the Halo editions. And with Halo 4, we didn't really get anything. We got a bunch of in-game content. We got a bunch of digital content, but we didn't get any physical stuff. Yeah. So it's like they need to look at giving something physical to people for the next legendary and limited editions of Halo, whatever that may be.
I'm thinking what I'd like, though. Because sometimes, I mean, I get what you're saying. Physical stuff's cool, but sometimes the little stuff they'll pack in with limited editions is just kind of hokey. Like, you'll buy it, and then you'll like look at it later and be like, why did I purchase this? You know, I mean...
Well, I mean, I look at the Halo 3 limited edition and the Halo... Well, the Legendary Edition and the Halo Reach Legendary Edition, and I mean, they all work for me in terms of what they have in there. I mean, with Reach, we have Holly's Journal, there was the statue, there was a bunch of other little things in there. And then with Halo 3, we had the helmet, which everyone, when they saw that, it just went goo goo gaga over. So, I mean, everything that has come out so far with the Bungie Legendary and Limited Editions have been, I think, highly praised by people. I don't think there's been anything in there where it hasn't been of interest to people that went out and bought them. Because, yeah, you have the casual person that will go out and buy the regular edition of the game, but they won't get those extra editions because they don't care too much about having that extra stuff. They just want the game to play the game. Yeah. And I think more people probably were going for the limited edition here because of the in-game items. But I think if you really want to cater to the true Halo fans, you throw that extra physical stuff in there and have people that really appreciate it buy those extra editions.
Well, you know what I would appreciate? And then I know I might take flack for this. I don't know. But here's what you do. Every time I get a limited edition, I don't feel like it's limited because I go to my, you know, local, you know, they buy back books and CDs and movies and games and stuff like that. It's Hastings Entertainment here in the Midwest. And every time I go there, I see a whole bunch of limited editions. So I know that it wasn't really limited. There were a whole bunch of limited editions that they make, and that's fine, but then it doesn't feel like you're really getting a limited item, like you're not really getting a collector's item.
Right, so you're getting more of like the bonus pack.
Yeah, like I want to feel like when I get the collector's edition or the legendary edition or whatever you want to call it edition, I want to feel like it is legitimately rare and limited. So here's what you do, and this would even be a good way to make money. I mean, not make money, but get people talking about a certain game or whatever. Like, say Halo 5 comes out and they have a $150 like legendary edition, but there's only about like 500 of them made. I bet they could sell all 500 copies of that $150 edition in what, 3 minutes? And then you just come back 4 months later and be like, oops, we made more. Oh, we got another, you know, 5,000 if you want one. And so those 5,000 go, and you know, that, I don't know. But just make a really limited
one way
edition.
To possibly do it is for people that buy those editions, they have to buy it through something like Microsoft or something where you don't have these third-party vendors go through and resell and have all the collections like that.
Yeah.
I think that might be an interesting avenue to do it where it's like if you want the extra edition, then buy it through Microsoft, and that way they can control it. And maybe it comes to the point where they get a certain amount of pre-orders at one point, and they can estimate how many they need to make of the Legendary Edition. And then after the game release, it's like, okay, if you didn't pre-order it, there's no way you're going to get it, kind of thing.
Right.
That I think it would be truly special to people buying those extra editions, where if you can limit it to people that possibly pre-order the game or maybe have a certain window where afterwards it's not going to be available anymore after the game's released,
right?
Then that holds a lot more sentimental value to people than if it's just you go to somewhere like Best Buy or GameStop and you find extra copies lying on the shelves.
I know a lot of stores hate the limited editions because usually they're massive compared to the other boxes, and so they take up all the shelf space, so they have to put them in storage. And then you have all these stored up limited editions that they have to get rid of somehow, so they liquidate them, you know, they put them on clearance.
Right.
And it doesn't really feel limited. Like, I want BS Angel to go in to, you know, special copies of the Halo 5 limited edition and sign her name onto them. You know,
yeah,
that'd be great to, like, find it, you know, a BS Angel signed copy.
Well, I think a lot of things for me, when Xbox One comes out, it's unless there's a special limited edition that I'm going to buy, which is going to be a new buy, it's not going to be a used buy, then a lot of the games I'm going to get are probably going to be digital download. And at that point, GameStop is losing the value from me as a customer for all the resale stuff, unless I want to go back and buy some old Xbox games for like $7 that I might find time to play somewhere in some distant future. But I think the resale value for games for Xbox One, and I've been paying close enough attention to PS4 and what they're going to do with their digital download, but I think that used game market's going to diminish, especially if they bring back that sharing feature.
Yeah. Well, they said they were going to bring it back for the digital stuff, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Like the games that
yep.
you purchase off their digital service, you can share them, so I don't know.
And
they're,
honestly,
I mean,
there's a bunch of people that would possibly lose jobs through that, but GameStop as a corporation is not that highly looked upon in some of the more hardcore gamers, in my opinion.
I don't know. Back when the whole used game fiasco was happening with X-Bone, there were a lot of people that were all... you're right. People, hardcore gamers, generally didn't like GameStop. They would usually talk bad about GameStop. A lot of people have bad experiences at GameStop. Not necessarily the corporation's fault, even sometimes, as much as you'll hear stories about just, you know, employees that don't know anything about video games talking about,
yeah,
you know, about, you know, you want to purchase Battletoads for PS3 or whatever. that was an old Podtacular prank call joke that is, I don't even know why I told it. It's an in joke, but only I get it. So, GameStop, like, everybody hated them. Then when the X-Bone thing was happening and they thought that there wasn't, you know, you couldn't buy used games or sell your games for Xbox One, that, like, all of a sudden all these people rallied around GameStop. They're like, yeah, we love GameStop. We love buying your used games, you know?
Well, then it's like they only buy them back for $2 and then they resell them for like 7 or 8. They get a
that's their model, though. I mean,
300% profit off of it, and it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, but I mean, pawn shops have been doing that for... I mean, forever and a day, as long as pawn shops have been around. But I guess I just don't care that much about GameStop. You know, if they fail, it's their fault. If they succeed, it's their fault.
Yeah, and you know, I'm kind of the same mindset where it's like, I really don't care.
I don't hate them as a corporation. Like, I'm not going to boycott them. Like, some people, they just find companies that they just love to hate, not even because of their practices. They just don't want them to succeed. And, like, I don't think that way about GameStop. I mean, I've been to GameStops. I've had... You know, I've had some bad experiences, and I've also had some good experiences. I mean, so, I don't know.
I mean, I don't mind GameStop as a company either. It's just the whole used game thing that kind of ticks me off a little bit, or rubs me the wrong way, how they have that used game market done. It's just ripping off the consumer, really, and they don't even know.
Well, it's not ripping off the consumer. It's ripping off the developer. The consumer benefits from used games.
From both.
I mean, the consumer doesn't... I mean, you're not a consumer when you go to sell. I mean, unless you're actually going to purchase
well,
the games.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But...
I mean, like,
I mean,
if,
yeah,
if you're going
you're
to sell the game...
Games, just basically, if you want to win at GameStop, go in and buy used games, but don't sell them any games. That's the only way to win.
Right.
But, I mean, somebody's always going to lose. I mean, in any financial transaction, somebody's got to lose something, somebody's got to gain something. I mean, there are usually no completely even-handed transactions. So I'm just saying, if you go in and sell your games at GameStop, that is your own fault. That is because of your own desperation. If you're going to do that, you're better off just getting in-store credit.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that with my Pokemon games a while back because I got to a point where I wasn't having enough. I wasn't really having the time to play them much anymore, and I didn't think I would be playing them as much. And then it's like, I get to college, it's like, I want to play those games again. Oh, wait, I sold them all.
Yeah.
It's like, I sold Yellow, Red, Blue, Gold, and Silver, and they only gave me $14 for them. And now I'm looking back, and it's hard to find those games now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, that's a...
But anyways, I mean, we're talking about Halo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were talking about Halo, because now that Halo's transitioning over to the Xbox One, it... you know, probably won't be affected by used game sales as much.
Right.
Fun fact.
Yep.
So Halo 4 is coming out, Game of the Year edition.
Yeah, that's the next topic up on the board. And, yes. Of course, that comes out tomorrow as of this recording. So by the time you're hearing this, it's probably already out. Right now, it's only being sold on the Microsoft Store. I'm guessing they're going to be opening it up to retailers probably tomorrow as well to order. So... you'll probably be able to look up on Amazon, GameStop, EB Games, wherever you buy your games from normally. We'll probably have them in the listed in their store or online some point, not in the too far distant future. Of course, the Halo 4 Game of the Year edition is including all the DLC that has been released up to this point, and that includes all the pre-order bonuses that were available for launch of Halo 4, the War Games Map Pass, the Halo 4 Champions Bundle DLC, and then there's some new armor skins, I think, along with weapon skins, emblems, and avatar items that come with the game as well. Now, I know for some people, at least for people running tournaments, they were going to be looking for the Game of the Year edition as being that way to have all the maps be installable on console, but it looks like if it's really the War Games Map Pass, then it's going to be code downloads. So all those people running tournaments will still have to buy additional copies of all the DLC in order to get all those extra maps loaded on those consoles, which is kind of stupid if you think about it.
I mean, would all that DLC require a third disc, though? Or, I mean, is there enough room on the multiplayer disc to get all that stuff on there?
I don't know.
Because that's, I mean, the people, if it had everything just right there on the disc, yeah, I'd get it. That would probably be great for time. I mean,
I'm guessing with the second half of the Spartan Ops Season 1, it would probably take a third disc.
Yeah. That was the great thing about I can't remember what they called it, the Blast-tac- it wasn't the Blast-tacular.
It was the Halo 3
Map-tacular map pack. Or Halo 2.
Oh, you're talking about something different.
Yeah, I'm talking about the Halo 2 maps. Like, they released the maps.
They had the disc.
First,
yeah, they had the multiplayer disc.
They had it on the disc, and that was the great thing about the disc. Like, if your friends hadn't bought the map pack, you could just give them the disc and they could download it.
Yeah, and you could do the same thing with the Halo 3 multiplayer when Halo 3 ODST came out. You get the multiplayer disc and you can play all the maps from the disc. And now we're getting into this state where it's like Microsoft's trying to grab every dime that they can. So it's kind of sad to see that they're doing it that way instead of having it all on disc where you can take it to any Xbox and play it no matter what. Because that still means that you have to be logged into an Xbox Live profile that has redeemed that content in order to play it. You just can't play it locally with no one on the box signed into Live.
I think that if you could buy the maps, or if the maps were just right there on the disc, a lot more people would end up buying this. I think a lot of people who just play Halo 4 right now, who own the game, would go out and buy it just so they could have it, you know, for events like, you know, all the conventions or tournaments or, you know, whatever. That'd be great.
Right. I don't know why they're going this route of having to do it all via DLC, all by downloadable content. Why not just do it like it's been done in the past with the Halo 2 maps and the Halo 3 maps and make it to where it's on disc?
Well, and then you don't even have to worry about, you know, people trying to all download the thing at the same time.
Yeah, just install it from disk.
they're all installing it from the disc. You know,
I mean, War Games is already installed from the disc. Spartanops is already installed from the disc. Just have the two discs in there and install it straight from the discs.
That would be way, way faster than having to download it and then install it for people. It
baffles me that they wouldn't do something like this. And
well, okay, imagine that you're Joe Blow, you've never played Halo 4, and you've decided that this is the time, right? Because this is the time. If you haven't played Halo 4, like, this is the thing to get, probably, because this is the cheapest way you're going to get the entire game as it stands right now and get some extra stuff that some people don't got.
Right.
And like, it's 40 bucks.
Right. 40 bucks. This is the time to go, get it now. But then he goes home and he's ready to play, right? He's ready to go play some multiplayer. He doesn't care about single player that much. He gets on and then he has to download
everything. I
can't even imagine, you know, how many gigs it is worth of every single map pack and the champions bundle and all of these, you know, skins and different. He's
going
to have to wait for, 2 hours or whatever just to play everything that he had bought.
And that's depending on his internet connection.
Yeah.
That's not to say that.
Well, if he doesn't have an internet connection, I guess he's just screwed. But what if he just wants to play locally? What if he just wants to...
Yeah.
And he doesn't have an internet connection, you know? I mean, he wouldn't have access to all of the things he bought.
Yeah, so the Halo 4 install, and this is with me having the disc actually installed along with the game, is 16 gigs. So the Halo 4 install game is 7.3, so you're looking at somewhere around 9 gigs worth of content. A little less than 9 gigs worth, 8.5 gigs worth of content. So yeah, you could fit that on a dual-layer DVD. So yeah, you could fit on one Xbox disc. But still, that...
It remains to be seen.
I can't believe that they would... And maybe it is all on disc stuff and they just don't specify in here, but the fact that they say War Games Map Pass instead of saying all the DLC on a disc...
Yeah.
Makes me think that it's stuff you have to redeem a code and download.
Well, I hope it's not. I mean, that just seems like the way they're probably going to do it. But here's hoping it's on the disc.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens tomorrow.
A lot of new Ricochet players, though. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure how much adopted this is going to be amongst new players. I mean, we already have seen the population of Halo 4 dwindle. And it's very low at the moment, so I don't even know if we're going to see a high adoption rate for the Game of the Year edition. We may see some of those people that are on edge before get it, because it is a lot cheaper now. But
the free release of Halo 3 is no coincidence. They're definitely trying to say, look, if you liked Halo 2 and then you just quit for some reason after that, here's Halo 3. Play through this. And then if you like this, you can continue on in Halo 4, right where the story left off.
Well, 4.5 years after the story left off. But yeah, I get what you mean. It's just they're shooting themselves in the foot if they're doing it in the way that they're doing the map pass and the champions bundle to where you have to actually redeem a code and download it. Instead of doing it how it's been done in the past, where you've had all the maps on a disc where you can install it.
I hope that it's not like a disc at all. Like, you just get the box and you open it and there's just like a code in there.
Well, that's probably what it is, but you still have to redeem that through live account.
The entire game. Like, you have to download the entire game and the map pack and the bundle. There's no disc at all in there. It's just a download code.
It's just a pretty box with
a very pretty box anyway, but. Can I talk about that real quick? I'm not going to
go
on about it. Like the picture on the front with the chief, you know, looking at the Didact cryptum opening or whatever, like that's cool. That's a nice picture. All these quotes on the box. Like, if you're making a Game of the Year edition, if your game is so great that it was the Game of the Year, why do you have to put quotes on the front of your box to try and sell it? I mean, I can understand, you know, Halo 4 Game of the Year edition. That's all it should say. There should be no quotes. It should be very minimalistic.
Well, there's only one quote on there.
Oh, yeah, the best-selling Halo game ever.
And the only reason that is because...
Well, what's at the bottom there? I can't read it. Something Master Chief.
It's the extra stuff that it includes. It's talking about the Master Chief avatar cloak.
All right. No, I guess that's not that bad, but they could have picked a better box. I don't like the look of this box. And I've seen some bad boxes. I mean, this ain't the worst, but...
just from the picture that it has on there with the Chief? It's...
I don't know. It ain't that big of a deal, but...
I mean, the boxes for Halo 2 and Halo 3 were pretty simplistic. And this one's just... You have Chief that's right in your face, and you have the Didact right in front of you, and then you have part of Requiem showing on one side, and the dust kind of rolling up. So it's there's too much emphasis on the Chief in there. And I know the story is supposed to be all about... Well, part of it's supposed to be about Chief and Cortana, but there's plenty of other aspects of Halo 4 that's not just the Chief that they could show off in the box art.
They should have put Palmer on the cover. Egghead's right on the cover of Halo 4.
I mean, yeah, where's the recognition to Spartan Ops?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not particularly displeased with it. It's not the best box, but it's not a bad box art.
No.
But that is going to be available, of course, on October 8th for $40 from the Microsoft Store, and probably dropping into places like Amazon, GameStop, Best Buy, all those things, and different places probably pretty soon as well. Let's see. Moving down through the rest of the Halo Bulletin, we have some matchmaking playlist updates. And, of course, we have the Forge Ricochet contest, which is actually open until tomorrow. So by the time you're hearing this, it's probably already over. So we'll get to see some of the Ricochet maps that have come out. And I'm guessing they're going to be put into matchmaking probably not too far after the contest is done, judged, and evaluated. So it's interesting to see that they're getting people to participate and get community support this way. And Ricochet is a fun game type. I've played it. Brent's played it. We've all probably played it at some point, and it's a very fun game type to play.
Yeah. I love it.
And I'm personally excited to see what kind of maps we'll see out of it, because you can only do so much as a developer when you're developing a game quite like this. And I know it's been done by a certain affinity, and they have a little more time than 343 does probably, but when you put the community creativeness to the task for it, you're going to come out with the best maps and the best foraging capabilities out there. So I'm excited to see what comes out of this.
Yeah, why make certain affinity charge for it when the players will make it for free?
Well, the thing is, certain affinity can actually go in and build the maps for it if they like were going in and building different sets for it. Like the Pit is obviously a remake, so there wasn't much additional effort that had to be done there other than kind of reskinning, retexturing, and it's still a lot of work, don't get me wrong, but a lot of that framework was already put in place. But if they were to actually go out and build a map specifically for Ricochet, then that would take a lot of time and effort with all the playtest, making sure all the geometry works, and having certain open pathways and closed pathways. And the community only has Forge, which you can do a lot with Forge, but you don't have a full map editor to do it with.
That sure would be nice.
Especially with the Forge budget limit that you have.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm ready for some Ricochet maps. Do you think that there should be like one like monolithic Ricochet? Like, I'm not... imagine you're playing Ricochet professionally. Like, you're a professional Ricochet player and you are in the professional Ricochet league. Like, should there be different maps with different, you know, geometries and setups and layouts, or should there be like one monolithic map type like there is in Griffball, which is just a box, basically, and all different variants are just basically little changes on that one design?
That's a good question. I would say for me personally, having different maps in there is probably good, because it adheres to kind of how Halo is done normally in competitive, with the normal Halo with shooting and everything. But you do bring up the interesting point where it's also a sport like Griffball, and if you have a lot of variety on the court, then it really changes the experience and it's not a set experience. But I think if you had a certain core set of maps within certain guidelines, then you could possibly do it that way. Like, I know for Griffball you have different size courts, you have different things that you can do with the courts. Like, you can do wall hops on the back, you can have certain other little elements within the court that don't really affect the game too much, but are just kind of little aesthetic and very tiny functional changes. And I don't know if you would be that strict on something with Ricochet, but possibly have a certain set of more stricter guidelines. It's like, okay, it has to be a certain size. You can't throw the ball from all the way across the map in order to score. You have to only be able to throw it from midcourt. You can only have certain weapons on the map. There has to be symmetrical. It can't be asymmetrical, all that kind of stuff. So I think within certain guidelines, you could have a certain core set of maps and then have a community kind of build around those guidelines and then come up with those different maps. Yeah. So I wouldn't say just one Ricochet map and game type to rule them all, but maybe have one or two variants of Ricochet and then have a core set of ideals to build maps out of and have people build those maps. Like Nuke Taco is the cartographer over at Griffball Hub for all the stuff that they do with their maps. And kind of is the final stamp of approval. It's like, okay, this map is playable. But you could have probably different people be community cartographers in that sense and come up with a certain set of guidelines and standards for creating a Ricochet map. And then based off of those standards, you could build other Ricochet maps on that. So that's my take from it. What about you? What do you think?
Personally, I would like just one map layout that I could work with, or just maybe one or two. That way you could actually get a team and get some strategies, you know, made up. Because when you're always switching between the different map types, I mean, you're never going to be able to really make a strategy around map placement. And I think that that's kind of the big thing about Ricochet is, if you're going to get strategic in a Ricochet game type, the best way to do that would be to place your teammates in certain places of the map that you need them to be, like, at certain points in the match. And you can't really get that down if you don't know what map you're going to be playing, you know, in your next match. So, personally, I don't care. I mean, when it gets down to it, I'll play Ricochet on anything because I think it's the best game type to come out since Assault. But
yeah, well, so you bring up an interesting point because I was just about to mention, if you throw Assault into the mix, kind of how they've done it with competitive Halo in the past, there's always like two or three maps that they assign to one game type. And I think that they can do that here with Ricochet, where it's like, okay, these maps are the set of official maps. Like, because I think AGL is looking at possibly picking up Ricochet as a game type for their bracket. So you have a certain set of maps that have been tested and community approved, and you have those two or three maps that are the de facto standard for Ricochet. And if you're playing Ricochet competitively, those are the maps that you go and learn. So yeah, I think having the strict set of guidelines to first build off the maps and then have a community vote on as to which maps are kind of the de facto standard for Ricochet, I think is something that is probably the best way to go about making that for any kind of competitive play for Ricochet. So,
yeah,
that's my two cents. Going off of the Ricochet topic, there's a little guide that Bravo has put together, and it goes into how to set up a race with Ricochet. Now, I've talked to a few people on Twitter and Skype and all about how race should really need to be just race. It shouldn't be this bastardization of a game type that's in there. And we've seen the modded race game types, and they work very much like race. People have been able to go in and even take some of the assets that were in the game as if they were already working on race and they just didn't have time to finish it, but go in and actually make a legit race game type that doesn't have all these extra things tied to it, make it a simplistic game type where you don't have to go up and set up all of these custom options.
Yeah, they just need to make it its own game type. People love race. I don't know what's wrong with them. I think that there's this compulsion to make sure that every single game type involves some kind of combat. But I think that Halo's a big enough universe that, I mean, if you look at the Forge stuff now, some of the best, you know, Forge game types aren't about combat. They're just about crazy stuff happening.
No, it's all about having fun. I mean, if you join our Wacky Wednesdays on a regular basis, half of the game types we play, it's not about killing the other person. It's about knocking them off a platform, about surviving something, getting run over by something. It's not about shooting things.
Right.
So, and if you look at Halo 1, Race was in Halo 1 of all things. So,
well, I love racing. They need to bring the race game type.
They need
type
to bring it back
Halo
as its
5.
Own game type. And they can still do it in Halo 4. It looks like the infrastructure is there, and people have made the game types to where it can support race as race was experienced in Halo Reach. So I don't know why they don't spend some of the dev cycles in order to build that kind of thing, because there's obviously a community demand for it.
It's
we don't want a bastardization of it from another game type that just happens to be in there. We want the actual game type of race.
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to weighing, you know, the risk and reward of putting development resources into making a race game type. I mean, there are a lot of people that
want a race game type.
Well,
most of the work has already
type.
Been done. If they just take the modded game type and tweak it to where it's a little bit more clear cut and all the extraneous parts that people add in there taken out and make an official set, more than half the work's already been done for them. So
I hope they do it, but I'm just saying I don't think they will. I think that you might see it in Halo 5 if you're lucky. And, you know, I'm not the luckiest guy on the planet, so
I don't know.
I hope we get it. We need it.
I hope so, too.
Racing. I mean, driving around in a Warthog is one of the quintessential things about Halo. I mean, if you think back at all of what the Halo franchise meant from a gameplay point of view, you know, even in the early days, one of the cool things about Halo was driving around in the Warthog. I mean, the last part of Halo 1 is driving a Warthog through the Pillar of Autumn. I mean, that's fun. That's a great part of the game. People love, I mean, they like driving vehicles in Halo, and that's why race is fun. You know, you get somebody on a Mongoose and they go nuts. It's fun. People like that. It's the same reason people play Mario Kart nowadays. That game's been the same for the past 10 years now. Nothing's changed about the Mario Kart formula very much, but people keep buying it, you know, iteration after iteration, is because even though it's just carts, you know, kind of bouncing into each other, it's fun. People like racing.
Yeah, well, it's carts with weapons, and that's the same thing that you get with Halo. It's vehicles with weapons. So, yeah, they need to catch wind that race needs to come back, and they actually need to do something about it. But I had hope for a while that they were actually developing a race game type when they announced that race and Rocket Race were going to be coming as part of the matchmaking rotation stuff. But now that they've released this guide on how to build race out of Ricochet, it's kind of dashed my hopes and dreams there, and when those come around, I don't know if I'm going to be playing those game types, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because if it's not real race as race needs to be, then I don't see any point in playing it. I'm not going to play Ricochet. I want to play race. So that's my take on it. Moving on to the playlist calendar, there's some interesting new graphics that they have on here. They've announced the playlist rotation a couple of bulletins ago, but now they have a nice little calendar view on it with some pretty screenshots and everything. So if you want to check that out, check out the Waypoint Bulletin from last week for October 2nd. And they also have listed on there some community play dates that they're going to be doing as well. They're going to be doing one for the Oddball playlist release, which is going to be on the 14th of this month. So next week, they're going to be doing one on the 11th of November, and that will be for multi-team. They're going to do one on the 9th of December, which will be race. And that'll remain to be seen whether it's actual race or if it's Ricochet race. Yep. But there's some nice little pretty calendars on there. It'd be cool if you could actually download it and print it or something. I think that'd be a cool calendar to have on your wall.
Do they make an official Halo calendar that
I don't
you can
think
buy
so.
At like a magazine stores?
I don't think it is. I don't think there is one.
That's odd.
It'd be cool if there
seems
was.
Like something people would buy.
Like instead of a firefighter calendar, you have a Master Chief calendar.
Yeah. Just hot pictures of the Chief getting out of his armor.
I think there were a couple of screenshot sites that you could actually order calendars from that they had like top screenshot pics of the community and whatnot. I wonder if Jess did that on her old blog. I don't know. But I feel like that's been done by the community before somehow.
Yeah.
Last thing on the bulletin before the screenshots, of course, is APK, who's one of the big members over at Go Beyond Entertainment, who actually got to meet at PAX, He's been working on a Countdown remake from Reach. So it's titled Project Rebuild Countdown. He's been working on it for quite a few months now, but he has a video up now with the final release of Countdown, I believe. And it visually doesn't look like Countdown, but in the sense of where everything goes and the layout and everything, it definitely feels like it could be a very good rebuild of Countdown. So I think this may be something that we'll have to try in a Wacky Wednesday or something, because he did a very good job forging this thing, and it looks really good from the outside. So if you have a chance to go check out the bulletin, definitely do. Watch the video that he's put together for the release, and we'll probably play it at some point in our Wacky Wednesday. But what did you think of Countdown from Halo Reach, Brent? Because I know for a lot of competitive players, it was one of those big maps, or one of the bigger known competitive maps that a lot of people either hated or liked a lot.
It was okay. I really didn't have any strong opinions about it either way. I mean, I didn't like love it, but I didn't, hate it either. Just kind of I don't know. I like the different tiers on the map. That's the only thing I like about it, I guess. I did just Countdown always seemed kind of a bland map to me. Not especially interesting, but I mean, it wasn't a terrible map. It's still fun. It's just not right there in my my top 20 even.
Fair enough. I know a lot of competitive people in Halo 4, and some that I used to play with often, would go into Countdown and play it on hours on end. So it was, from what I understood, it was one of those maps that you either really liked it or you really didn't. So from Reach, it was a pretty good map. You had, like Brent said, you had the tiers, you had the different pathways to run objectives if you were doing objectives. Lots of viewpoints for Slayer from a lot of different points of the map. So it's a very, it's one of those maps where I think the reason why competitive players love it is because there's so many different angles and so many different pathways that you can take. And that diversity and complexity is something that really sets aside or distances the amateur players from the competitive players. Yeah. So it's that whole skill gap kind of thing. So, but yeah, check that out. They have a lot of stuff up on teambeyond.net about it as well, but you can definitely check out the bulletin, and he has a little interview with Bravo on how the map came to be, all the intricacies of how he built and put all the forge pieces together, and a lot of other good little tidbits of interviewness from Bravo. So definitely check it out. Last but not least on the bulletin is the screenshot spotlights. And this week's theme is orange, of all things. So lots of explosions, lots of incendiary people being shredded to pieces. Looks like a couple of kill balls in here, but let's see. I think a favorite for me is going to be Reignition and Dust to Dust, Ashes to Ashes as my top two. The Gatekeeper's pretty good, and Griff is pretty good. But I think for me, Reignition and Dust to Dust, Ashes to Ashes kind of make the top two position for me. What about you, Brent?
I like Reignition. That's probably my favorite. It looks pretty sweet. I like Orange Overwatch, too. That's real clean, real, not minimalist, but I don't know. Just nice. Just a nice looking screenshot.
It has a lot of simple layers on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And until you see the Spartan there with the scatter shot. But yeah, so that wraps up the bulletin for this week. And to wrap up the show, we have one submission that got put in our inbox earlier this week. So we are going to read that before we wrap things up. Sorry again, guys, this is going to be a short show because we're just kind of getting Brent back into the swing of things, and we don't have a big topic to talk about at the moment, but we are looking at some bigger podcasts coming in the line very soon. So, Brent, if you want to go ahead and read our one and only submission, you may do so.
All right. This comes from Michael, correct? I'm reading that right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm just making sure that it was from Michael. Michael says, I haven't played Halo since Halo 3 and only at a friend's house because I never got the 360. Still, with the faux post-Bungie Halo, does it feel wrong? I can only talk out of my ass, but from what I watched, Halo 4 looked like Marathon, as you definitely have heard. What you should try is play the Marathon trilogy on an iPad or iPhone if it's no longer distributed free online back in the day. Personally, I still play Halo 1 and 2, even if they made a cliffhanger. Do you think Halo 4 is worth borrowing a 360? How do these new developers compare to Bungie? I just kind of want to reminisce Marathon, which is a Microsoft property. Poor Jobs debuts one of the best games of all time, only for Gates to bribe most of Bungie away. You know Halo was supposed to be a uni-level game, completely free-roaming and easy to get lost. Entirely to brag, I was at the E3 when the Xbox first came out and got to kick the developers' ass. That's when they had the Xbox tents. I stayed in there until I beat the damn game. I spent way too much on the forums waiting for Halo Man, but seriously, play Marathon and read every single display. Marathon was, I mean, if you're a modern FPS player, if you're a 15-year-old kid, I don't think you're going to enjoy Marathon if you go back and play it.
I've never played it.
I went back, tried to play it, I got a little bit into it, but the entire first-person genre has advanced so much that going back and playing a Doom-style first-person shooter, it's just kind of... It's just weird having this 2D sprite firing 2D bullets in a 3D space. It's just, you know, creepy. It's weird. But if you're into really cryptic messages and stories that are extremely hard to understand, and you enjoy the terminals in Halo, you will really, really like Marathon, probably. Because there are a ton of terminals in that game.
Okay.
I
think I have it downloaded when they were offering it for free.
Yep.
But I've never played it.
Well, I don't know now, but...
The Bungie links are probably still on their forums somewhere.
I don't know why you would put it out there, basically open source in a way, and then just take it away. I mean, once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah, there's probably mirror sites somewhere that has it as well. But Marathon wasn't a Microsoft property, was it?
No. Marathon was...
Because he said in there that it was a Microsoft property, and I was like, no, I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I can check. I wouldn't think, though, because...
That was a Bungie really property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was on the Mac. It wasn't even on PC.
Yeah, it was.
So no, it wasn't.
No.
Microsoft.
Anyways, that's one of the minor points to his thing. But as far as borrowing an Xbox to play Halo 4, if you're interested in the storyline for Halo and you want to see what they've done with the story of Master Chief and what they've done with Spartan Ops, I think it's a good idea to borrow it. I mean, it's a game with a good story, so it's always a good idea to just try it out and play for the story. I don't think there'd be... I mean, even if Halo 5 was a flop, there wouldn't be any reason I wouldn't go out and buy it to at least play it and see what they're doing with the story. Now, I might not like it in the end, but to go see what they did with it, I think is still kind of important if you care about the franchise. Now, if you said you've played only Halo 1 and Halo 2, I would play Halo 3, like, for the story. Like, you said you've played it at a friend's house, but never got a 360, so I don't know how much of Halo 3 you've played, but if you haven't played the campaign and the campaign is what you're interested in, then I would go play the Halo 3 campaign when this comes out for free in a couple of days, and then play Halo 4. But that's just my take on it.
Yeah. You definitely have to play Halo 3 before Halo 4. You don't have to, but...
It's advised, especially with some of the stuff that is insinuated in Halo 4, and most of it is pulled from the books, like a lot of the finer details of the story, but unless you have played through the campaign of Halo 3, or at least understand it, like, you could probably watch a lot of the cutscenes and get away with it. But if you don't have a general understanding for what happened in the campaign of Halo 3, then you're probably going to be even more lost of what happened in Halo 4.
Yeah.
So... That is it for our show tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, we have Brent back in the hot seat for co-host, so you will get to hear from him a lot more often now.
Yeah, so, I got to get back in the saddle. I got to get fired back up, you know. So
I'm sure we'll light that fire pretty quickly.
Yeah,
Of course, you can check us out on our website, podtacular.com. And just like Michael, if you have a submission that you would like to send our way, you can do that a few ways. You can send it via our big green submit button on the homepage. And that'll take you to a form that you can fill out and tell us anything in terms of a map that you might be making or a funny Halo story that you want to tell us, or if there's something in the Halo universe that you would want us to discuss. You could leave it that way, or you can send us an email directly to submissions@podtacular.com, or if you feel so inclined, you can leave us a voicemail at 240-200-HALO. That is 240-200-4256, and leave us a message there. You can also check us out on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch TV, which is where we normally record our podcasts on Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And we can also find our Wacky Wednesdays on there as well, which is Wednesday at the same time. And we will be resuming our Monday night matchmaking, not this next week, but the week after, for the oddball rotational release of the playlist on the 14th of October. So we'll be bringing our Monday night matchmaking back then as well. Some people have requested it, and with that request, we are going to be bringing it back. So you guys have that to look forward to. And with that said, Brent, thank you again so much for being back on the show. I'm sure everyone will be very happy to hear your voice from here on out. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, keep on fragging those Game of the Year editions.
Keep on fragging Halo 3. You'll soon be fragging Halo 3.
Yes, you will.
For free.
You'll be fragging in Halo 3 for free.